Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never knew I'm blessed, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Whoa, feeling the pressure, baby. Let's go. Back in that one studio. On the What Are You Made Of show with your boy C-Rock in the building. Got Mikey Lewis in the house today. And before we introduce Mikey, I just want to thank all of you for being here, watching, listening, however you're consuming this content. And I appreciate you keep coming back and telling people about us, rating us, commenting, all the stuff that, shows support. I really appreciate that. So let's get right to it. Mikey Lucas is a speaker, entrepreneur, author, podcast host, and mentor to many around money and life. Before he could become all of these incredible things, he was knocking on doors. Starting in 2013, he knocked his way to becoming one of the most reputable young names in the door-to-door community. He attests his success mainly to this purpose-driven lifestyle, which he now mentors others in. His passion on this planet is to encourage men nationwide and worldwide to break generational curses and establish financial freedom. Mikey, welcome back, man.
What up, brother? Good to see you again.
Yeah, you too, man. Hey, where are you located nowadays?
I'm out in Houston, country in the world, Texas. Out here in Texas.
Houston, Texas, man. All right. What's going on in Houston? Like, why Houston? Why did you settle there?
Two reasons. One, I'm in the epicenter of the energy capital of the world. So I started an energy fund about 2.5 years ago. Had an idea really 5 years ago, and started it about 2.5 years ago now. And I said, okay, what is, you know, if I'm going to be teaching people that you need full immersion, I go, all right, well, I should be, you know, taking my own advice here. I moved to Houston, right in the middle of the two richest, in theory, neighborhoods, so that my wife and I shop at the same grocery stores all the oil men and their wives shop at, dine, play, all that, you know, go to the gym. And I needed to rub elbows with them and feel that type of energy that these people are on, because they are on a different level of energy, no pun intended, like actually are. And then also my wife needed, I work from remote. So, you know, I didn't need necessarily the environment, but it did help. But my wife wanted to work at a top rated, top five hospital. And she got, you know, offers at all of the top five children's hospitals. She's a specialist, and she took Texas Children's Hospital, and it's been a blessing for us. So that's why we're here.
Awesome. And where did you guys come from?
Vegas. Born and raised. Okay. We're both born and raised in Vegas.
Okay. And what was that transition like, man, going from Vegas to Houston?
I mean, I've lived out of a suitcase doing door-to-door sales for a decade. I've lived out of a suitcase for, the better half of that 10 years. So I don't mind it. You know, it wasn't like very fun as far as like leaving family, but I know that like I'm going to stay calm. I just know myself. So I know if I don't, and a lot of you that are listening, if you don't leave your current environment, you're going to stay the same. It's because you've created those really engraved habits, and you know, you eat at the same places, you work out at the same, like when you get comfortable, you know, that's what technically it scares me. So the transition wasn't easy, but especially for my wife, you know, she moved away from her mom and dad, which was not easy for her to do, which she did for like 6 months and then moved back home for college, you know. But you know, it was great, because now my wife and I are like, you know, it's just us two out here. Like literally there's no friends, no family, no nothing. We had to start from scratch, find a church, find a community, find, you know, places to go. And now we're here.
Yeah. All right. Well then, so talk to me about, I want to elaborate more on the energy people, like what you said that they, the way they think and all that, like what is it that you're seeing with them? Like what differences are you noticing from the other people that you've seen or been around?
Okay. So there's, I guess you can go back to a story in Baltimore. So in Baltimore, my first year knocking on doors, there was a guy that I worked with named David. And he said, you know, these kids will never have an opportunity. And I disagree with him and would argue with him as we're heading out to the territory where we're going to go knock on doors. And, you know, like the kids that are there, they're impoverished. They don't have good schools. They don't have whatever, you know, every other block is a fast food joint and a dollar store. Like they're never going to have that opportunity. And I go, no, you can take the kid out of, you know, that area, put him into another area. And I guarantee you, he will rise to the standards of the people in that area. That's just how human nature is. You will rise or fall to the standards of the people in your environment. It's just like in football or baseball, if you play a crappier team, you end up, you know, playing down, which is like the coaches would always say, don't play down, don't play down, don't play down. Right. And obviously what you focus on that you end up getting, but the people in this area here, they're all in, you know, $1.5 to $3 million homes plus. And, you know, they're not all of them are driving brand new Mercedes, but there is a lot of them. My mentor, he lives just down the street here, manages $38 billion. He drives a 2017 S-Class Mercedes. Like, but the way that they treat themselves and they treat other people is the exact opposite, Mike, of what people think and say about the ultra wealthy. Is the people that I'm around that I see, you know, the only thing that I would say, I go, okay, this is the only thing that's different here. In Houston, I don't know if this is in Dallas, but when I live in Dallas, I didn't remember this happening, but in Houston, when you're backing out, they don't stop for you. They just keep on going. Like, they just keep driving past you. That's the only thing that I'm like, interesting. Like when I'm backing out, you see me trying to back out. Like, even if you don't want the spot, like, let me back out so we can get going. It's just a not, that's the only thing that I notice here that's different. But as far as their attitude at life, it's still community based. So there's a lot of like helping out people, saying hello, smiling. Mm-hmm. There's no like racial tension that is in this specific area. When a Black American shows up to the store and an Indian American shows up to the store and a white American shows up to the store, it's like, they're like just people. They don't think of people differently. They just are regular people. Cause if they're shopping in that area and they're not dressed like a slum, you know, they're like, oh, like you belong here. You deserve to be here. So there's just there's a higher level of aura in that post wealth. I guess you could say, status.
Gotcha. Yeah. What about this fund though? So how did you get the idea to start this fund? What does the fund invest in specifically? And
two things there, I guess. I got the idea because I've read Ray Dalio's book and studied wealth creation, you know, studying Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett, Ray Dalio, these guys. I was like, man, like I can be like these guys. These guys all dropped out of college. These guys all, you know, didn't do, you know, had hard upbringings, and I'm not hard, but you know, they had, you know, not, you know, just handed everything to them. I was like, this technically could be me too. So I was like, oh, no, why not? So I just started, as I was studying wealth creation and the art of creating wealth, I realized that if, you know, and then I started to hear like, you know, OPM, other people's money and stuff like that. I was like, okay, like, I wanted to get really, really good at managing my own money, which I did. I would, you know, for years, I'd wake up and watch the market open up at like, you know, 6:30 a.m. in Vegas. And, you know, with a buddy of mine, we'd drink coffee and talk about stocks and stuff like that and investing and whatnot. And then obviously learned how to get into real estate and then got into franchises and other businesses. And I realized that 14 of the top 15 billionaires come from energy. And I was like, okay, well, I've been doing energy for the last decade and a half. Like, why not just continue to invest into this problem, which is the energy crisis that we're in? Like, if unless your head's under a rock, you know that we have a problem with energy. It's either extreme right or extreme left. It's not, there's nothing in the middle, and people need to realize that they need to unite. The United States needs to unite and say, okay, if we're going to transition out of the fossil fuel era, we can't just turn off the spigot of natural gas and expect, you know, low income elderly people not to suffer, because they will. They're going to die. If they just turn it off, which is what they want, they're going to die. They're going to suffer. There's not enough money there to be able to, you know, have, you know, regular people not suffer. So human flourishing is a key there. And yeah, I wanted to not rely on the government to solve that problem. So I said, okay, well, private capital could, and you know, the whole Steve Jobs quote of like, you know, the crazy kid that thinks he can change the world is usually the one that thinks that can change the world. And that was me. So I ended up saying, okay, screw this. If there's nobody that's going to start an energy fund, I will. And there is other energy funds out there, but in the groups that I was in, it was all real estate. It's a blue ocean strategy. So I wanted to do that to solve, you know, not world hunger, but the world, you know, the United States energy issue and in crisis that we're in.
And what do you invest in? Like, what kind of things are you invest in when somebody gives you money? How's it work?
So yeah. We buy direct interest into oil and gas wells, pipelines, and solar farms. So basically, like the same thing as you would say in real estate, you buy that, you know, 100 unit, you buy a portion of that 100 unit complex. We buy that's called direct interest. So we actually buy the oil and gas wells themselves. We'll go buy leases with like 30 or 40 wells on it. We'll have to rehab them. I'll kind of use real estate terms so people understand it. We'll have to go and rehab and then get these wells back up and running. And at that point, I mean, at least right now, it's a we're in 2009, 2010 for energy. We're in an energy super cycle. It just got, you know, completely destroyed in 2019 again. And right now it's on the way back up, and we're going to stay on a high for a few more years, even though people are saying, you know, oh, it's not going to, it's like, what is your basis on that? And why, what is your thesis on why energy is going to go down? And how is that even possible? So yeah, we buy oil and gas wells, we drill them. We don't do any wildcatting. So we're not like oil finders. We drill what's called an offset. So we know there's oil there. We've produced, let's just say, you know, 50,000 barrels, 500,000 barrels, 5 million barrels of oil. We'll go, you know, a couple hundred yards to the east or to the west and drill another, whatever the computer says to drill, the operators will go and drill. We are non-operating. We don't do the operations. We are just the, we're non-op, and we partner with the top drillers in the United States, like Occidental and Chevron, Shell.
Right. So energy is not going to, like, it shouldn't go down except for technology. Right. And yeah. What are the speculations on that when it comes to, you know, more solar, and, or if they find a way to produce energy with water somehow, or.
Sure. Whatever. Yeah. So I'm a big Elon fan, and I know that, you know, has gotten me a lot of flag for the last 10 years. You know, it was really cool. And then all of a sudden he bought Twitter and turned it into X, and now everyone hates him again. So, you know, here's the thing. If Elon says hydro is not going to work, or it's not there yet, it's not there yet. So just because we have the concept that hydro can be used does not mean that it can be at a mass scale. Like, sure, would I love to use and turn salt water into energy? Of course I would love to do that. But to use it on a mass scale is damn near impossible for the next 20, 30 years. But doesn't mean that we shouldn't still try. It's the same thing we did for the last whatever 30 years now with solar and with wind. Like, we tried. I've installed $178 million worth of solar, residential solar, in the last 10 years. Personally, 27 of that was my own. My company did almost $200 million in residential solar. I love solar, but we need 100 times more solar than we currently need today if we're going to even remotely come close to, on a global scale, to eliminate fossil fuels. Like, we're not there yet. So this whole, like, idea that we can stop fossil fuels today or tomorrow, or even in like 5 or 10 years, is a myth. And the worst catastrophic event is not even remotely close to what these stop oil people are trying to say. Though, Mike, I want to transition out of the fossil fuel era, because I know that there could be a catastrophic event, and I don't want to look back and be like, well, Mikey, did you know about this? Could you have done something? It's like, no, Mike, I'm out there going and doing it. It's just, it's annoying when people are like, you should stop it right now. It's like, okay, well then, why don't you take everything with petrochemicals out of your life? Stop. Like, including the internet that some, you know, an oil or a diesel truck, you know, dug in the ground and put, you know, your cables there. Like, why don't you take all your oil and gas out of your life and see what happens? You can't.
Yeah. Well, and there's so much money in it too. Like, if, let's just say right now, all of a sudden today, somebody said, holy shit, we were able to figure out the water, the hydro thing.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to push that under the rug so fast because there's too much money in it. Like, it would, right, it would hurt the economy. And then that could, the secondary ramifications of that. I mean, it's just,
right,
you know, it's the same thing with like cure for cancer. I mean, if somebody came up with a cure for cancer, it's going to be hushed.
It already is,
you know? So
high dose vitamin C cures cancer. And it's no one's talking about. So does stem cells. It does. And no one's talking about it.
Yeah, of course. So because it's all capital and it's all money thing. So, all right. So what are you doing though, as far as the solar game? Are you still in the solar game?
No, only on a macro scale now, just solar farms. I still have my podcast where I interview my ideal client, where, you know, the guys come in, I interview the top sales professionals, in the door-to-door space, just to add value back to that so that I don't, completely become, you know, worthless in the door-to-door space. So I still have a foothold in that door. I'm not going to let go. I'm never going to let go of that. But no, I don't sell solar anymore. I still have a massive referral network, but I usually just will give those to some of my clients or people that, you know, I can trust in the solar industry that can, you know, deal with that type of client in that specific, they're a expert in that market. So I don't sell solar anymore. I just am doing the energy and gas wells and solar farms.
And then, so when you're talking about your clients, you're talking about investors.
Yeah, investors, and a lot of them are from solar. So yeah, investors and people that I have coached in the past. I don't do a lot of individual coaching anymore. I've got a financial mastermind that I teach guys how to create generational wealth. So it's relationships. I'm a big relationship guy. So, hey, if I get a referral and I know I can trust you, Mike, with the business that you run, you know, obviously I'm going to send all of my guys to you. And because I my reputation is everything. If I send mm-hmm. them to you, Mike, and I know that you don't fulfill, then I that ruins my relationship 100%. With potential yeah. people that are in the future. So it's a big relationship game.
Yeah, 100%, man. And so what are some of the things that you, because everybody looks at wealth differently, generational wealth differently. I know some of your mentors and the people that you've studied from afar and took mentorship from afar. But what are some of your building blocks or foundational principles that you talk to people about generational wealth?
I would say the number one is it is probably closer to 90%. 90% mental and 10% strategy. It could be 80-20, but 90% mental and 10% strategy. What people don't understand is that they want to get rich overnight, and everybody does. That's why do you think there's so much money in the lotteries, right? Like I passed by today, it was like $480 million on the lottery. I'm like, who the hell has that much money? And it's just the onesie twosies, the $20, $30, $40 people that are apparently getting this lottery up to $500 million, which is crazy because they think that they're going to hit that.
Support.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So there's that. It's more of a mental ideology around money and wealth rather than it is necessarily a strategy, because I hear all the time, I don't know what to do with my money. And I'm like, yeah, cool. So does everybody else. Neither does everybody else. But the key factor here that I teach is to build generational wealth. You need to live under your means, which is obvious, but don't raise your lifestyle until your passive income can pay for it. And most guys, they have a hard time doing that. So what I do is I just have them create, almost from like the book Profit First, a bucket, or like, I'm not a real big Dave Ramsey fan, but like the bucket's the envelope method, where mm-hmm. you take, you know, a dollar, 1%, 5%, 10%, whatever that looks like. Let's just say it's 5%. 5% of your money, of every paycheck that comes in, needs to go towards fund coupons or blow money, like stuff that you're going to spend in 6 months from now, it's going to be in the closet. 5% needs to go towards vacation so that you can have a guilt-free lifestyle of being able to go on vacation. Like I just got back from a beautiful cruise in Mexico. I'm like, my God, can I go back? It's freaking freezing here in Houston. Uh-huh. I was just in Mexico. I'm like, dude, it was a couple $1,000s that we could spend while we were there. We didn't even spend it all. So like we just rolled it over to the next, in theory, vacation. And now we're already planning our next vacation, which is cool. But yeah, you don't raise your lifestyle until your passive income can pay for it. And then another, I guess you could say, thing that people don't get is this is probably the biggest tip that I get, or biggest, I guess you could say, clickbait or thing that whenever I ask people, hey, what did you learn from, you know, Mikey Lucas over the last 2 years, 3 years or whatever, it is the 10% rule. Is when you invest $100,000 in cash, you can, if you get back 10% returns every year, that's $833 a month. So Mike, if you all you have to do now is figure out what I call the four buckets. You have money for now, money for later, money for a lifetime, and then generational wealth. Okay. So if your money for now is, how do I get enough $100,000 increments to get to the point where it pays for my current lifestyle, not a luxurious lifestyle, but let's just say it's only $5,000 a month. Okay. Well, you need, you know, whatever that is, you know, it's like $500,000 in cash, if you will, to create almost that, you know, $4,000 a month, $5,000 a month in passive income. But if you don't have a clear strategy, then you don't realize how easy it is actually over a 15, 20, 30 year period that you can actually get to the point where you create generational wealth and pass down stuff. And then at the same time, not go bankrupt, which unfortunately is what is happening. And people need to really be careful, because they're this whole, like, you know, having all the watches and the cars and the vacations is really destroying the American middle class.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, here's the thing. I always think about this, right? With, when it comes to, not increasing your lifestyle, right? Cause I look back and I'm like, shit. Yeah. I did that when I was younger. Right. I think a lot of us did. But on the other hand though, if you keep your lifestyle a certain way, I think there's a danger in settling and getting to a point where you feel like you don't need more money. So there's gotta be something that motivates you to go above and beyond that, because subconsciously there's this thing, like if you keep $5,000 a month, like I can't even make sense of $5,000 a month being an overhead for someone. I just really can't. I mean, I'm a single guy. Like I don't even understand how they could do that. But like if you did that, and then settling, you'd have to have some kind of like, I don't know, you got to instill that, because not everybody's built like born with that drive. You know what I mean?
I have a plan for that. So I put them in debt. So I put them in $2 to $4 million worth of debt within a matter of like 50 seconds. So for instance, I go, Mike, okay, cool. Let's act like you're 20 again. Were you married at 20 yet?
No.
Okay. So Mike, let's go back to 20-year-old you really quick. Best case scenario, in 10 years from now, you're 30. Are you want to be married?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Do you want to have kids?
Yeah.
Cool. Roughly how many kids, best case scenario, had all the money in the world, how many kids do you want? 2, 3, 4, 5 kids?
Let's say 2.
Okay, 2 kids. Awesome. Sweet. Best case scenario, had all the money in the world. Would you send your kids to public school to get a generic education, or to private school where they can be around other millionaire and billionaire children? Best case scenario.
I like public, but this is a whole nother conversation. But let's say, I know where you're going with it, private.
Yeah, you'd be the second person of like a million that have said public
school. I'm different.
Most, right. So, and whatever it, I know, it's their own, obviously.
I understand what you're saying.
Their own. So at that point, now you're taking $15,000 a year per child. You know, you're in $600,000 worth of debt. Okay, cool. You have a daughter and a son. Are you going to let your daughter pay for the wedding, or are you going to pay for a wedding?
Right. Pay for.
Awesome. What if she wants, you know, best case scenario, you had all the money in the world, Mike, just swipe the card, bro. Swipe the card.
Yeah.
She wants $100,000 wedding. Are you not going to pay for that? Okay, cool. Awesome. Then what about her grandparents? You're not going to fly them out here. You're not going to put them in and let them have an experience. So at that point, all right, cool. Best case scenario, tell me your house. Tell me the car. Tell me your giving. Best case scenario, what are you going to give back? What's going to make you feel fulfilled in 10 years? You had all the money in the world. All the money in the world. What are you going to do with your money? So at that point, I'm getting them into $2, 3, 4, 5 million worth of debt. So at that point, yes, when I can get them to agree that they have to live under their means, it's not delayed gratification. It's called delayed return. Okay. When you have delayed return, you go into that area, you realize that you're sacrificing for the betterment of who people are going to remember you for tomorrow, not just for today. Okay. So when you realize, yes, that's another hard thing that a lot of leaders, especially in sales, deal with, is they go one or none, I guess. You say they get you to spend all your money, and then now you have to continue to sell, right? Mm-hmm. But in other words, they eventually get that eventually you burn out. So I still want you to figure out how to get you to how to sell as if you've spent all your money. So in other words, we just pre-spend all your money. So now when you allocate five to 10 different buckets of your income, now you're saving for your future daughter's wedding. And you're literally even if it's a dollar out of every paycheck, Mike, now you don't even have a daughter. You're not even married. You don't have a girlfriend.
Just the energy of it. Just the energy of the fact, the habit, you know, of it.
Not only that, I'm like, bro, what's your most ideal car? For me, it was a 1998 Nissan GTR. Okay. I'm like, I'm going to get an R34 GTR. I had an R35. I'm going to get an R34. And I have that account. And in 2024, in a couple of days from now, I'm going to go out and start to find that R34, because I have a bank account that's I've been saving for 3 or 4 years now. Since 2018, I guess 4 or 5 years now, that I've been saving for, that I have enough money in there to go buy that GTR. And it's not this overwhelming charge. It was a couple percentage points into that account. And it makes me realize that I actually have hope for a future instead of my bills are paid today.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. And then you could also change your mind and not want the damn car, but then you still have the capital sitting there.
Boom, now you have the capital to redirect somewhere else.
Yeah. And sometimes you may still want the car, but you're like, shit, I might as well finance it because I can get more return on that money sitting somewhere else.
Right. But at least I took your money out of the account and I put options. It towards something. Exactly. Now you have options. But before you didn't have options. Now you just had a bunch of debt.
Yep. 100%. I had another question on this, but I want to shift direction here, because as we wind down here, I want to go into the podcast world. And, you know, I know you've been podcasting, you've been going on other shows. What is podcasting, having a show and going on other shows, done for you personally as just for you and growth and also your business?
Okay, so I've raised millions of dollars from my own personal podcast, which I would have not. I don't know these people. They don't. Most of them didn't even know me before I interviewed them. But after a year, 2 years of now us becoming friends, you see me out there with my shirt off, riding a pump jack in an oil field, and you're like, "Okay, tell me more about what's going on with Mikey Lucas, because you've been doing this for years and years and years. Like, what is going on?" So just by getting in front of and interviewing, now I'm genuinely curious whenever I interview my guests that I actually want to learn, because these people are like the top 0.0001% of the entire door-to-door industry. And these individuals are animals. Like I have notes where I'm like, this person is an animal. I'm like, oh my God, dude, like this person's crazy. How can they do so much and still have a high, high rating and 5-star ratings? Like, this is wild. but they're so systematized. So I'm learning from them, number one, but two, I've raised millions of dollars from my podcast. Whenever I'm out on other people's podcasts, it is just an exercise, not only number one for the beginning a couple of years ago was to find my voice. But two now is I'm able to encourage more people. And it's not a, please come and buy my crap. I don't need your money. I need you 20, 30, 40 year old men to change and become men instead of boys who can shave and figure out your money so that we can eliminate divorce in this country so that we can have a phenomenal generation of men instead, just like the older generations, which we don't have anymore. Instead of these, you know, men wearing bikinis now, it's like, dude, it's weird. So I want more men to wake up and I'm trying to be more like in theory political, whatever. I'm trying to be more controversial. No,
Hey, listen, do you, bro? I'm good with it. I love it.
It's true though. I'm like, dude, it pisses me off. But anyways, like the last like 4 years in a row, it's like been a man of the woman of the year. It's like, I just don't understand. What if my daughter was there? I'd be so pissed.
But here's the thing though. With that being said, oh, by the way, I'll let you finish your point first. Cause I want to comment on what you're saying, but go ahead.
You're good. So whenever I go out on podcasts, obviously these are people that I probably would have never touched in the first place. This has nothing to do with go buy my crap. I don't even really have crap to sell, to be honest with you. I don't have crap to sell. Most of my stuff I give away for free on the internet because I just want people to change. And I want them to see that this idiot, Mikey Lucas, that dropped out of college 3 times, jumped by his high school sweetheart, taking for 3.5, 4 years, you know, 600, 500, 600 milligrams of Oxycontin a day that should be dead and in prison right now, can make it. And so can you. Like, I just want to inspire people to realize that the story that you've been telling yourself is a limiting story, and you can be renewed. You can be restored. You don't have to live in guilt, shame, condemnation forever, and to understand who their creator is and their value is and their identity is. And they need to, you can break out. You can too. If I can, literally you can. It just takes a lot of time and it is what it is. So yeah, whenever I go on shows like this, it is, I know there's somebody listening that is in your ecosystem that needed to hear what I just said. And I come at it hoping that is the case.
Yeah, that's it. That's it, man. But by the way, so when you're talking about the weird stuff and all that, there's an agenda, right? And I think that if we come at this from an agenda point of view, where like the source, instead of like, why are these people doing this stuff? And why are people trying to say it's okay and this and that and make it normal? And all, we go to the source, and the source is intentionally doing this.
Yeah.
And it's a psychological game. People are buying into it. They can't think for themselves. They're not free thinkers. They go with the crowd. They go with what authority tells them to do because they don't set their own intentions. So I think, and the same thing with the money game, we got to go to the source, not just the how, and that we got to go to the source of why do people think in that way in the first place? And then also like raise the veil. Cause like once people know something, you can't unknow it.
Correct.
Like once you know that there's powers to be in the World Economic Forum's trying to do what they're trying to do, and everybody starts to like think about what those people are trying to really do, you can't unknow it. So they can't fool you anymore.
Right.
Right. So when you're talking about that stuff, that's why I was laughing. It's like, dude, I don't get mad about it anymore. Like the people I just see sheep all over the place. Yeah. And I want to help, and I'll team up with you on this. Like, we got to get the word out about what's really going on behind the curtain. You know what I mean? And I think if we get 25% of the population really understanding that, so they're not swayed anymore, then they can't do that what they really want to do.
Yeah.
And that's where a few of us can make a big difference.
Yep. If you know, I call it the Occupy All Streets movement. You occupy your streets, I'll occupy my streets. I'll teach my men, you teach your men. Let's team this thing up together and make sure that, you know, everyone is, as the fire gets hotter, we don't turn around.
100%. Well, what's next, man? What's the vision from here? Like, if I had the ability to snap my fingers and make it happen, what's that look like for you? The future?
How far out?
Dude, who knows? Just whatever. Whatever came to mind when I just asked that question.
Yeah, I am running a billion-dollar energy fund organization like a BlackRock. I am the next Larry Fink, Ray Dalio, and on the private sector, so more like Ray Dalio. I'm solving the energy crisis not only now in the United States or the North America, but now the entire world, where we are going out and investing in through philanthropy as well. Putting up solar farms, wind farms, geothermal, and finding more natural gas, and putting up infrastructure for not just first world countries or second world countries, even third world countries at the same time, and creating more of an entrepreneurial state, which is what the people in those third world countries actually want. They don't want to be handed a paycheck by America. They want to build a business. That's what they want. And that's what we're doing.
Yeah. And so how can people find you for this purpose here? Is it MikeyLucas.com or do you want to send them somewhere else?
Yeah, MikeyLucas.com. Hit me up on Instagram. Same Mikey Lucas, LinkedIn. That's LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, X. You know, it's best. That's just in the messages. I'm there. I have my team there as well, but I'm there.
Go check them out, guys. If you vibe with what he's talking about, man, which I don't know why you wouldn't, but it's not up for me to decide. I love what you're doing, brother, and I'll support you, and I want to be a part of it any way I can to help you if anything that you can think of. We talked earlier about some ways we can help, but we got to get this thing going 100% and make it move as fast as possible. So hang tight, Mike. Thanks for being here, brother.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
All right. Guys, listen, keep coming back on the What Are You Made Of show here with your boy C-Rock. We're rocking with some great guests. Finding out what's going on into their world, what went into making them who they are and where they're going. We're going to continue to bring that here to you from That One Studio on the What Are You Made Of show. Until next time, Mike, hang tight. Until next time, be that one.
Music licensing reimagined.